Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. And hey, listeners, we see all your questions coming in for questions that you were too embarrassed to ask. So we're going to collect them and hopefully we'll be able to get to them, if not tomorrow, next week. We see this is really important to people. So no worries if we don't get it to it today. We're not going to get to it today, but I wanted to let you know that we do see you. And someone responded to our last segment. I wanted to read this. It says, thank you for talking about the effect on fashion and shopping. As a now unemployed pastry chef married to a yoga teacher clothing designer, we are frantically trying to adjust. People ordering his Cinetype printed clothes online is key to us paying rent and supporting our three kids. We send our thoughts out to you and everybody else who's having a difficult time right now. It's interesting when you think about these times and we're socially isolating. Does it mean that we should just stop socializing altogether? Science journalist Lydia Denworth thinks that now more than ever, we should be making time to stay in touch with our friends virtually, of course. In her new book, Friendships, The Evolution, Biology, and Extraordinary Power of Life's Fundamental Bond, Lydia demonstrates why friendships are so important. Without them, we suffer both mental and physical consequences. Lydia, this is a perfect book for this moment. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Allison. Thanks so much for having me. I didn't know that this was going to happen, of course, when this book came out. It came out in January, and things have changed a lot just since then.
So in the book you write, there are visible aspects of friendship and invisible aspects. What's an example of each?
Well, the visible aspects, of course, are when we are sitting with a friend having a conversation and, you know, you can see that happening. I'm sorry. I thought I had turned off the do not disturb. So off my phone. Anyway, but the invisible aspects are what's happening inside your body. Friendship actually gets under the skin is the way that biologists talk about it. So it affects the way your genes are regulated and the wiring in your brain and the way you process the world when you're out and about in it.
When did you first become interested in the science of friendship, not just the cultural part, the actual science of it?
So about 5 years ago, I had finished my last book, which was about hearing and the brain and sound and language in the brain. And that had gotten me kind of interested in neuroscience, which is what I primarily have been covering these last few years. But I discovered that there was this world of social neuroscience where they were really looking not just at the connections inside your brain, but at the effect of the connections sort of from you to other people and how that has an effect on your biology and your physiology. And I just thought that was fascinating. And just the very fact that neuroscientists were talking about friendship seemed a little bit surprising. And I wasn't wrong about that. I mean, it's been a long time that, well, for centuries, people have appreciated friendship. They thought of it as pleasurable and valuable, but they never thought of it as invaluable. And it turns out, just in the last kind of 10 to 20 years, that a different breed of scientist has been looking at friendship and assessing more what it means in our lives and how it plays out over the course of somebody's life. And I thought that was fascinating, and I thought it was an aspect of friendship that people hadn't appreciated. I certainly didn't. And I'm also, you know, in the middle of my life, in transition, kids leaving the house, losing my parents, things like that. And it seemed like maybe this was a good moment to think about what mm-hmm. the role of friendship was in our lives.
Is there an evolutionary reason that friendships develop?
There is. There has been something of a survival of the friendliest at work, basically. There turn out to be real evolutionary advantages to being able to make and maintain strong, positive social bonds. And we see that in humans a bit, but where it was really most evident was when scientists discovered that there is friendship, or they, more appropriately, I should say, they recognized that there is friendship or something like it in other species, especially non-human primates, but not only monkeys and apes. So even baboons, who have more and better friends, live longer and have more and healthier babies, which is about as good as you could do in evolutionary terms. And so finding it in other animals helps us to understand better some of what we see in humans, which is the same thing, that people who are more socially integrated tend to live longer, and people who are lonelier or isolated die earlier and have a lot more health problems.
My guest is Lydia Denworth. The name of her book is Friendship, The Evolution, Biology, and Extraordinary Power of Life's Fundamental Bond. Okay, what does the science say about the age-old debate? Quality or quantity when it comes to friendships?
Quality. Quality, quality, quality. Quality matters most of all. Quantity is not unimportant, and there are different ways in which it factors in. But if you have to pick, you should focus on the quality of your relationships. And just to add to that, so one of the things that this new science of friendship has done is it has clarified what we understand friendship to be. I mean, that's one reason why it didn't get studied by a lot of people was because it's not so easy to define or to measure. But now where we've sort of arrived at a place where there's some minimum requirements for friendship. And usually a good quality relationship with a friend is something that is long lasting. So it's a steady, reliable mm-hmm. presence in your life. It's positive. It makes you feel good. It makes them feel good. And there's a cooperative, reciprocal aspect. So some give and take, and I help you out, you help me out, that kind of thing. Those three things, long lasting, positive, and cooperative, are critical pieces of friendship. And human relationships can have more than that, but I mean, other layers to them, but you've got to have all those three legs of the stool to consider it a quality relationship. And the thing is, those relationships that fit that definition are high quality, and they are the ones that have the most impact on your biology and your health. And the good news is, even one makes a massive difference in somebody's life. It's not that you have to go out and be the life of the party. Just one good friendship will have an important impact on your life.
Can having a toxic friendship or toxic friendships do more harm than having no friends at all?
I haven't thought about it as a trade-off, but yes, toxic friendships are bad for your health. And more interestingly than that, ambivalent relationships where there is some negative and some positive in how you feel are also not so good for your health, it turns out. People thought that, the researchers who looked at that, and there's not a lot of them, this is relatively new work, but they thought that maybe the positive outweighs the negative. That's often we hang on to these relationships that have been in our lives for a long time. Unfortunately, it's bad for your biology. If a relationship has more negative than positive in it, it has an effect on your blood pressure, your immune system, your stress responses, all kinds of things that aren't good for you.
Where in our life cycle do we learn about friendship? Or is it a biological thing?
No. Well, it's both. So we are born, humans are born with a propensity for social interaction. Babies come out into the world looking for faces, for instance, and more attuned to human voices. But then that response is fine-tuned, even in the first years of life. You can watch a baby's brain now over the first 2 years of life becoming more and more tuned to social signals and stimuli. And so we learn perfect how to be social. So you could say that we come into the world predisposed, but then experience makes a really big difference right from the and I'm talking about experience on the order of minutes and days. They can tell the difference in the brain of a baby that was born today versus the brain of a baby born yesterday in terms of how it's the social functioning in the brain looks. But then there's this whole, there's different phases. So your parents help prime that social brain. Then when kids get to school, they really learn a lot from their peers. There's this essential step that has to happen where kids are learning how to trust and to give support and not just receive support, which is something that they can't necessarily do with their parents. And then, of course, we get out into the adult world. By then, we've sort of learned most of our social skills, but we have to make sure that we're applying them. And some people are better at it than others. Some are more sociable naturally, and some people's interest in being sociable. It's variable, but there is this kind of minimal level where we really do have to have, we benefit from having some interaction. I mean, there's a reason why humans are so rarely alone.
As we're all trying to connect with our friends now in this moment, is there a better way, a more superior way to connect with your friends in terms of the amount of time, FaceTime, phone calls? You know, I have to imagine that seeing someone's face has an impact on ourselves physically, even if we don't know it.
This is true. There's a reason, for instance, why interacting in person, which of course is what we can't do now, is so important. And it is because eye contact primes the social parts of our brain. It gets us ready to communicate. It starts to trigger the reward systems in our brain that make us feel good. And we think that you get some of those same benefits from looking at somebody on a video, although not very much work has been done on that. We know that the brain responds differently to someone in person and versus someone who's recorded or taped. I absolutely believe that it has to be good to see the faces of your friends and family and loved ones in this moment. But it's also true that anything that hits those buckets I mentioned earlier, that it feels like a reliable presence, or anything that is positive and like, you know, have you tried to make someone feel good today? Did someone do something nice for you? Did someone say something nice? I mean, it's as simple as that. And then the reciprocal part, the back and forth, the sort of saying, you did something for me, I'm going to do something for you. What those things are now is different. But I think what matters less is the specifics of how you do it and whether it sort of hits some of those requirements. And one other thing I'd say is that I've been doing a lot of reporting, talking to mental health professionals about mm-hmm. resilience and coping in this time. And I think that a lot of their advice can kind of be mixed with what we know about friendship. So one of the really important things that helps people get through this is having a routine. It helps with the uncertainty. It helps with your, you know, give you some structure to your day and give you some control over your life. And it seems really a simple, important step would be to make sure that that routine includes some interaction with friends in some way each day. Maybe you're doing the same thing with a certain friend, you know, maybe you're talking to them while you're having a walk, or you're Zooming every week on Friday at 5, you know, you're having the same happy hour with your friend. A lot of people are doing that, right? And but it doesn't matter as much what it is as that there's some sort of structured part to your day. And the last piece I would say is that it really helps if people have some purpose and meaning in what they're doing. So that could be as simple as a project that you have, you know, a goal to complete. I mean, and it can be a big thing or a little thing. In my case, I happen to be at our farm in central New York, and I'm determined finally to learn some of the birds here because I'm here for days on end. And my friend who's here with me is helping. And so we are doing that together, right? And that's a very more lighthearted and simple project, but it does give me a sort of a sense of purpose. And so some people are finding that by volunteering and by coming together in their communities, which is a lovely thing that I hope will last beyond this crisis. But having that purpose, and you could do it with a friend, you could engage in a project, you know, and even from a distance, you could say, let's work our way through such and such a cookbook, mm-hmm. or let's read these books, or let's watch these movies and then talk about them, you know, whatever it is, you could do it with a friend. So that kind of mixing the purpose and the meaning, or giving yourself some structure, all of that can entirely be done in the context of friendship.
The name of the book is Friendship, The Evolution, Biology, and Extraordinary Power of Life's Fundamental Bond. It is by Lydia Denworth. Lydia, thank you so much for sharing your reporting with us.
Thanks for having me, Allison.